Okay, good morning, everybody. Well, we've had quite a lot about Esther already, haven't we? Most of you will be familiar with the story of Esther, but some won't, so I'm just going to pick out some of the details. Jill's done an absolute amazing job of picking out the main points of the story for us. There's just a few more things that I want to emphasise from the story of Esther. We've heard a little about who she was. We've heard a bit about her story, why she was excellent. She was a Jew, we've heard that. She was living in exile. She lived in a land now that we know was Persia, was the land between, the whole land between where India is now and Egypt. That includes Iran, Syria and Iraq. She was there. Why was she in that land? Well, she was there as a result of the Jews having been carried off into captivity by King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon. And as we've heard, she was an orphan as well, and she'd been adopted by her cousin Mordecai, who brought her up as his own daughter. Something we're also told in the book of Esther was that she was beautiful, lovely in form and features. Can you just imagine that? She was a very beautiful girl. Esther's one of only two women, the other being Ruth, who have a book of the Bible named after her. So she must have been pretty special, wasn't she? And this story is important because otherwise it wouldn't be there. So we had her living at a time when King Xerxes was the king in Persia. That was way back in about 486 BC. His capital was a place called Susa. And he had a big banquet for the people in his capital, for all his important people. And at the end of that week of celebrations, he asked his queen, Queen Vashti, to come and entertain his guests. She was beautiful too, to impress them with her beauty. And she refused. Oh dear, big problem. You didn't refuse a king. Well, that put the whole thing in risk, because that risked the king's authority, it risked his reputation, and he was advised to have her deposed, which he did. She was vanquished. Goodbye, Queen Vashti. That left a bit of a gap. Xerxes missed Vashti. So it was suggested, as Jill mentioned, that he had a beauty contest in the whole of the land to find a new queen. Young maidens from throughout that land were summoned to the palace, and it just so happened that Esther was one of these. Her uncle Mordecai, we'd heard, had warned her not to reveal her Jewish identity. Esther impressed everybody that she met. And after a whole year, can you just imagine this? A whole year of beauty treatments and wonderful times of preparation. She should have jolly well looked good after that, shouldn't she? She was presented to the king, and he too was impressed, and he made her his new queen. It just so happened that it was Esther that was made his new queen. Mordecai was concerned about Esther. You can imagine what she would be exposed to in the palace. And he used to wait in the courtyard every day just to hear news of her, to see if he could find out what was happening. And it just so happened that he overheard a plot to assassinate the king. He told Esther of that plot. She was able to warn the king. The plot was foiled, and the king's life was saved. It just so happened at this time that the king needed a new prime minister, and he appointed Haman, who from this point onwards we will think of as being horrible Haman. If you're aware of the horrible series, children, this is another horrible. This is horrible Haman. Mordecai refused to bow down to Haman, and this enraged Haman. When Haman discovered that Mordecai was a Jew, he hatched a plot to annihilate all the Jews, not just those in Susa, the whole of the land. And he persuaded the king to issue an edict throughout the kingdom to that effect. Now, if you remember from what Jill said, Once a king had issued an edict that could not be overturned, you just couldn't do anything about it. Even the king himself could not overturn one of his edicts. So the Jews all went into mourning. Mordecai urged Esther to go to the king to plead for her people's lives. And Mordecai told her, "If you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place, and you will perish. But who knows that you might be the one that's come to royal position for such a time as this." That's in Esther chapter 4. And these are possibly the most famous words from the whole of the book of Esther. "But who knows that you might not have come to royal position for such a time as this." Esther's response to this was to call all the Jews in Susa to hold a 3-day fast on her behalf, and she and her maids would also fast. And then she said she would go to the king. Now, we've heard this was very, very brave. Do you remember why? Because Esther knew that to enter the king's presence without being summoned would break the law. And if you broke the law, that was it. Death penalty. So she was being really, really brave by saying that she would go to the king. And her words were, it's recorded in the Bible, "If I perish, I perish." That was her attitude. Wasn't that a brave thing to say? On the third day, Esther went to the king. He extended his royal scepter. Phew, that meant that her life was saved. But Esther was also very wise. She wasn't just beautiful. She wasn't just brave. She was very wise. She didn't just rush in to the king and plead for the Jews. She invited the king and horrid Haman to a banquet. This not only charmed the king, but it also flattered Haman. Haman boasted to his wife and family of how powerful he was, how much influence he had over the king, that it was only him that had been invited to this banquet with the queen. No one else had been invited. But Haman was still enraged by Mordecai. He didn't like the fact that Mordecai would not bow down to him. His family, Haman's family, suggested that he have a huge gallows built on which to have Mordecai hanged. And now it just so happened that that night the king had insomnia. And it just so happened that in order to cure his insomnia, he decided to read some of the annals of the land. And he found written there something that had happened 5 years earlier. And that was the plot to assassinate him. And he read that Mordecai had been the one who'd uncovered the plot. Had he ever thanked Mordecai? Had he ever rewarded him? He hadn't, so he thought he ought to do something to honour Mordecai. And it just so happened that the very first person the king bumped into the next morning was Haman on his way to ask for permission to have Mordecai hanged on the gallows. The king asked Haman what he should do to honour somebody. Well, Haman immediately thought, must be me that's going to be honoured. So he said, "What you should do, king, is to have this person paraded round the whole of the city wearing your royal robes and crown, and it being declared that they are the person that you wish to honour." Well, Xerxes said, "Haman, go and do that for Mordecai." Can you imagine what Haman felt about that? That really did enrage him, but he had to go and do it. So that's what happened. That night, Haman went back to his family, humiliated and enraged further. But his wife sagely warned him. She said, "Since Mordecai is of Jewish origin, you cannot stand against him. You will surely come to ruin." Well, there's a few other people in history have found that out to their cost, haven't they? You cannot stand against God's people. You will surely come to ruin. Esther held a second banquet for the king and for Haman, and this time she revealed to the king not only her Jewish origin, but the fact that Haman's plan to annihilate all the Jews would cause her death as well as that of the Jews. The king was absolutely enraged, and he went out into the garden to ponder what to do about this. And while he was in the garden, Haman thought, my only way out of this, I've got to plead with Esther. So he literally threw himself at her. The description is that he prostrated himself. He threw himself at her where she was sitting on the couch, and it just so happened that that was the very, very instant that the king walked back in from the garden, saw Haman on his wife's lap, and that wasn't a good thing. He was totally enraged. He thought that the queen was being compromised, that Haman was trying to seduce her, and he decided that the best thing for Haman would be that he would be hung on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. The tables were truly turned in this story. The end of Esther tells us that Mordecai was then made the prime minister, the Jews were saved, and an annual celebration, which is known as Purim, was celebrated every year from that time onwards. It's still celebrated today. And as the book of Esther is read during that celebration, the Jews will stamp their feet and shout boo every time the name of Haman is mentioned. And that still happens to this day. Isn't that amazing? So, okay, we've had the story of Esther this morning. But why was Esther excellent? How is what happened to, albeit a very beautiful, a very brave, a very bold, a very wise Jewish queen, so many thousands of years ago, relevant to us today? One of perhaps the most interesting things about the book of Esther is that it's one of only two books in the Bible where God's name is not mentioned. The other one is the Song of Songs that Ange mentioned right at the beginning of the service. There's no mention of God at all in the book of Esther. Where was God when his people faced annihilation? Where was God when Esther risked her life? This is an accusation that is so often levelled against God. If there is a God, where is he? If he exists, where is he when all the bad things happen? Why doesn't he act? Have you ever been in a situation where God seemed strangely absent, where you were facing some great difficulty and it seemed as if God just wasn't there? I can certainly say I have at times. Where was God when there was illness, when there was suffering, where there was injustice, when bad things were happening? God may not be mentioned by name in this book, but his presence is certainly implied. The fact that Esther was a Jew and that she fasted implies not only her faith in God, but also that she prayed. Prayer and fasting were absolutely intertwined in the Jewish faith. You wouldn't do one without the other. So her prayer is certainly implied in the prayer of the Jewish people. And God answered those prayers. The book of Esther has also been called the book of the It just so happened that. Did you notice how many times I mentioned it just so happened in the story? There are just so many coincidences in the book of Esther. Situations in the story where certain people were in the right place at the right time for God to use them to bring about his plans and purposes. The book has been called the perfect Old Testament example of Romans 8 verse 28, which says, in all things God works for the good of those who love him. Seeming coincidences were not in fact coincidences, they were God at work. God was not hiding in the book of Esther, he was hidden, but he was there all the time, working in the background to bring about his plans and purposes. God is sovereign. God is in control. God's plans cannot be thwarted. I remembered as I was preparing a poem. It's an old one, but I'm just going to tell you it. It's called The Divine Weaver, and it goes like this. My life is but a weaving between my Lord and me. I cannot choose the colours he worketh steadily. Oft times he worketh sorrow, and I, in foolish pride, forget he sees the upper and I the underside. Not till the loom is silent and the shuttles cease to fly shall God unroll the canvas and explain the reason why the dark threads are as needful in the weaver's skillful hand as the threads of gold and silver for the pattern he has planned. The Bible tells us also that God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. That's in the book of Hebrews. God is still at work, putting the right people in the right place at the right time, just as he did with Esther. That should be a very comforting thought for each of us in whatever our situation is, whatever we're facing or might have to face personally. There's also a challenge. God was there when the nation of Israel were facing annihilation. Well, I just thought of Brexit. Whatever your particular political persuasion might be, in situations such as Brexit, how much do you and I still believe that God is sovereign, that God is in control, that his plans and purposes cannot be thwarted? Are we praying to that end? Finally, Esther herself. She was the right person in the right place at the right time to help bring about God's plans and purposes. In what situation today might you or I be just that right person in the right place at the right time to bring the right word, to do the right thing, to be bold, to be brave? Will you and I look for and pray for opportunities? Opportunities to be brave and bold and wise, even if we can't all be beautiful. Thank you.